12-Sided Stories is for mature audiences and often deals with topics that may be difficult for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
In the city of dreams, everyone wants to be a star, but at what cost? 12-Sided Stories presents Otherworld Hollywood.
Everyone, welcome to Otherworld Hollywood, episode number 11. My name is Wes Otis, and I am here with some amazing player. Wait, we only have one player this time?
Only one.
Introduce yourself.
Hey, this is Michelle. I am playing Belle Bellington, and we're going to have some fun this episode, I think. Enjoying the show? Then take a moment to join our Patreon. Support the podcast and get early access to episodes and bonus content. Head to 12-Sided Stories Patreon today.
All right, just as a quick recap, last time we got together, Robbie met Bassett, the Egyptian god of cats. Amane had a dream that her girlfriend Rose killed Trish, and Cass shot Belle in the face during a dream, and Belle woke up with her face bleeding and was rushed to the hospital. And Ebony woke up to this wonderful scene at her home and was given dinner and everything else. And then somehow the man who never speaks in the back of the studio is in her bathroom and they get it on. So that's the best way I can say it. And then all of them meet except for Belle, because Belle went to the hospital due to, you know, face bleeding.
That'll do it.
As you do. All of them meet at the studio. Robbie says, hey, this is what's going on. You know, I met Bassett, and the guy over there is the Horseman of War from the Four Horsemen, and we'll talk about it later. Meanwhile, at the hospital, Jimmy came in and said, hey, I had pictures of Rose, Imani's girlfriend, putting large packages of what looked like wrapped meat into the back of her trunk and driving out to the tar pits to get rid of them. And then, not long after that, maybe a few hours, a woman walked in to Belle's room, said, hey, you better leave Amane alone or you're going to have problems. And then threw a hand down on the bed in front of her. And that was the end of the episode. So we had a lot going on last episode. This episode's going to be a little bit different. We're going to be delving into Belle's past, as we sometimes do on this show, to give more context and why she's the bitter harpy that she is. All right. We start in Moline, Illinois. It is 1925. A young Belle has put together all of her worldly possessions in a suitcase and a purse, and her mother is wringing her hands as the bus is about to pull up to take her daughter away. She looks at you. I don't understand why you suddenly need to leave the town. You can get a perfectly good husband here and live out a good life just like I did and just like your grandmother did. It does not make any sense to me.
Don't you understand, Mom? This isn't sudden. I've been wanting to leave this place for a really long time. I don't belong here. I'm bigger than this place.
Your ego's bigger than this place.
Isn't that enough?
No, it's not. You think too highly of yourself.
Maybe you think too lowly of me.
Look, there are a lot of bad things out west. You're safer here. People try to take advantage of you. And what about church? What about all the people that you grew up with?
They've got churches out west. And as for the people I grew up with, maybe you think it's ego, but I don't know. This kind of life, it's not for me. I need adventure. I need something else. Something's missing.
Fine. Obviously, I can't stop you, but you're really killing your father by doing this. You're his only girl. I mean, sure, he's got six sons, but you're his princess.
I'm not a princess, Mom. I never have been a princess.
Well, what do you want to be? A whore? In L.A.? That's what they'll turn you into.
Oh, my God, Mom. Come on. Really? No. What they'll turn me into in L.A. is a somebody. I'm little Irma Sanchez here. I'm a nobody from nowhere. Who's heard of Moline outside of this town? Nobody.
And that's what keeps us safe from all of the outward forces that want to destroy this country, like the Catholics.
Safe. Safe is boring. Safe is boring. I can't. I'll go crazy if I stay here.
Fine. All right. Well, send letters. Let us know how you are.
I will.
She gives you as affectionate of a hug as a woman of her upbringing and austerity will allow. And you get on the bus and you drive away. All right, Irma, you end up pulling into Hollywood much the same way that Imani will 30 years in the future. The bus ride was probably a little worse, a little rougher. Roads aren't what they are in the 50s. But you get off the bus. What is your plan to conquer this city?
Well, I know I'm no actress, but I know I can write. I always did well in my classes in high school. I'm going to get a job at a paper.
All right. Any paper in particular, just like an LA Times kind of paper or like Variety or?
Well, I mean, I know those are the big guns, but just like, you know, a small paper, like some small local paper.
All right. So the Pasadena Press.
Sure.
Making that up, if there was a Pasadena Press, is a Pasadena Press. If you'd like to sponsor us, let us know. You head over to Pasadena Press. It's a relatively small newsroom with probably about six guys and a head editor. All of them are puffing away on cigarettes. Bell smokes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. And you walk in. The chief editor standing there in the things yelling at people. He looks at you and goes, "What are you doing here? We don't need a secretary."
I'm not a secretary. I'm a reporter.
Oh, really? A reporter that looks like you're fresh off a bus. Where'd you go to school, kid?
Chicago.
Any particular school in Chicago?
Chicagoland High School.
Oh, high school. And you're a reporter now. You didn't go to college yet?
My writing's good enough. And what are they going to teach me in college that I can't learn on the job?
Lying better would be one thing. All right. Well, you have this dopey look on your face like you might be able to get people to talk. So I'll give you a shot. No skin off my nose. You come back with a story. And if it's any good, I'll pay for it. And then I'll put you on a job. But how much money you got in your pocket?
Not much.
Then you better start running fast. There's a place in Hollywood. You can take the trolley over there. It's a speakeasy. Go over there and you're going to just see what people are talking about. Find out any juicy information. Bring back what you write. All right? And he gives you the name and location. He says, go to O'Brien's mechanic shop. You walk into the garage, go to the back, go to the back door. You say Patty, and they let you in.
All right, I can do that.
Well, I hope so. You went to high school in Chicago. Good luck, kid. And as you're leaving, you can hear the reporters all kind of chuckle in a loud, sexist way.
I muster up everything I have to walk as proudly out of there as I can.
You make it to the mechanic shop. That is a front for a speakeasy. And you go to the back and you say, Patty, and they let you in. The place is completely different. In the back room, there's this really nice looking bar. There's all of these people kind of milling around talking with each other as a jazz band is playing on stage. When Prohibition kicked in, especially where you're from, the good liquor did not last longer than 6 months. And then they started getting, you know, the next worst liquor. You were a little bit luckier because you were closer to Canada.
Well, here they used to bring it in from Tijuana.
Yeah. So they have better stuff here. They have good stuff here. They also have some stuff from all the way up in Canada because it gets shipped down. Hollywood is a very thirsty place in many aspects.
In more ways than one.
Yeah, exactly. And so the place is hopping and people are, you know, talking and milling around. What do you want to do?
I'm trying my best not to look like a kid who's fresh off the bus. You know, I'm trying to blend in as best I can to look like, yeah, I'm a cool person at a speakeasy.
Do you have disguise or anything on your character sheet?
I have acting.
What's your acting at?
25.
Okay, so why don't you give an acting role?
I actually made it a 19.
So you put on some swagger and you make your way over to the bar and get a drink. Now, has Irma ever had a drink before?
Yeah, she's from the Midwest. She's got to have had a sip of beer, at least.
She's from the Midwest, but a very religious family.
True. Okay, so maybe she hasn't.
Okay. About 5-10 minutes goes by and this gentleman walks up to you. He looks like he's in his early 30s, maybe even late 20s. And he's got a silk suit on and a fedora. And it's a dark gray suit with a white dress shirt and a blue tie. And the suit is pinstriped. He walks up and he goes, I haven't seen you around here before.
That's because I haven't been here before.
Tony Stinelli.
Belle Bellington.
Belle Bellington. Alliteration. I like that. We all change when we come to this city, I guess.
Boy, do we.
I'm taking it you're new.
What gives it away?
The fact that you just made up a name right here on the spot.
It's a darn good name, though, isn't it?
I will say it's a good name. So, what, are you going to be an actress or something?
Nah, I ain't got the looks to be an actress.
Don't sell yourself short, doll. You look quite good to me.
She just blushes.
Bartender, two more. Bartender comes over and freshens up your drink.
I'm trying to break in to be a reporter.
Interesting. What kind of things are you hoping to report on? Cats in trees, car wrecks?
If I'm being honest, anything that's going to pay my bills.
There's other ways to pay your bills that are a lot more fun.
I get that, but I want to be on my own. I want to have my own money. I don't want to have to depend on other people.
Foreshadowing.
Yup.
Well, why don't you come over and have some dinner with me? I just got here. I don't like eating alone.
Well, I don't mind if I do. Thank you.
He takes you over the table. And the first thing you realize is, number one, it's in like a prime location, not too close to the band, not too far away. He sits you with your back towards the door, like he's sitting looking at the door. Roll a spot hidden for me.
Hey, my spot hidden's better than my acting.
Well, let's hope.
I rolled an 11, no joke.
Wow. With an 11, you are looking around, and the thing that you pick up on is he seems a bit nervous. As smooth as he is with you, he's definitely looking around, making sure that he's got clear line of sight of the doors. There are two gentlemen, one's at the bar who is nursing a drink, not drinking it hard, just sipping and watching the door. And then there's another guy that's sitting at a table with a woman, and again, her back's to the door, and they just, every once in a while, you notice they give each other a glance, like they're signaling to each other that all is clear. And he goes, so where are you from?
The truth or what I tell people?
The truth.
Well, I'm from a little town you've never heard of, Moline, Illinois.
Wow. Yeah, that's a town I've never heard of.
How about you? You from here?
No, I'm from New York. My dad sent me out here a few years ago to look over some of his business. He's an investor, and he wanted me to look over his investments for him. He's back home in New York, and sometimes he comes out here, and but I don't see him often.
And I look around the speakeasy, and I go, investments, huh? And I just smile.
Here's the question. How much do you think Belle would know about the mafia?
She wouldn't know a lot about the mafia, but she's read her fair share of dime novels.
Cool. Okay. That makes sense. All right. So he goes, well, yeah, investments. You gotta keep your businesses safe from intruders and hostile takeovers. Are you interested in business?
I guess it depends on what kind of business we're talking.
Well, my family provides protection for different businesses in the area. We keep hoodlums and street thugs from damaging certain areas, certain neighborhoods, for a small fee. We also provide other things like gaming and some gambling for horses, that kind of thing.
I don't know that she would know about protection rackets.
I don't think she would. That's not a dime novel thing they talk about.
But she would definitely know there's something not quite legal about the gambling.
Well, yeah. And plus, I guarantee you that's something that was talked about in church.
Yeah. I'm like, gambling, huh?
Hey, some people say it's, not the most moral thing to do, but people are allowed to do what they want to do. This is a free country. You want to put your money down and take a chance? I just provide a service. It's not like there's some place you can go and gamble, though that would be a great, great way to make money. But anyway, you like steak?
Sure.
Motions to the waiter. Get us a couple of steaks and whatever vegetables not rotted. Walks away.
So, are you providing me with a business opportunity?
I'm providing you with a dating opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it'd be nice to take you out a few times. See if you like me and if I like you. I think I like you.
I think I might be amenable to that.
So we're going to jump forward a little bit. Basically, what happens is the rest of the night, you guys have a conversation. Things go well. We're going to jump forward to about 8 months later. He's taking you out on several dates. Let me ask you this. He is going to try and get you to sleep with him probably pretty quickly. Are you going to play hard to get the entire time, or are you going to give it?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think back then it would have been drilled into her that if you want to be a wife,
yeah,
you hold out, right?
Right.
So I think she might hold out.
So you start dating Tony, and Tony makes businessmen and actors and everything else kind of available to you to write about. He's trying really hard to get you to sleep with him, but you keep saying no. It was drilled into you that if you want to be a wife, you can't sleep with someone. And your mother definitely had an issue with promiscuous sex. She used the word whore very often about a lot of different people, and it kind of rings in your head a lot. Anyway, one day, 6 months into your relationship, Tony calls you and says,
"Hey, Belle, how you doing?"
"I'm good. How you doing?"
"I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I know you've been doing these stories about like businesses struggling and car crashes and whatever, but I might have something a little bit more juicy for your paper if you're up for it. Might help your career a little bit."
"Wow, yeah. I'd definitely be ready for that."
"We'll call your photographer." And
he gives you an address in downtown Hollywood. He goes,
"If you go to the front desk of the hotel there, it's called the Hotel Dreams, and go to the front desk, they know you're coming. They're going to give you a key. Have your photographer ready. When you open the door, start taking pictures."
"Well, all right then."
"All right. Good luck."
"Thanks."
"You got questions?"
"Well, I may be walking in on some stuff I'm not ready for."
"If you want to make it in this town, you got to get ready for it somehow, right?"
"True."
"There's a first time for everything."
"True."
So you call up your photographer.
Yeah.
It's not Jimmy, obviously, because you got him in like the 50s.
Yeah, he would be too young. He'd be just a little kid at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. We'll say it's Lawrence, an older guy, been doing this forever, chews on a cigarette like it's bubblegum. He meets you out at the Hotel Dream in Hollywood, and you go up to the front counter, and they pass you a key. And Lawrence turns to you and goes, "What exactly is this? What are we walking into?"
"Well, I wasn't told that. I was told that as soon as we open the door, start taking pictures. And I got a feeling it might be something pretty salacious if it's happening behind a locked hotel room door."
"Yeah, probably." He turns to the clerk behind the desk and goes, "Who's in this room?" The clerk looks at you both with a blank stare as if saying, "I don't get paid enough for you to know that."
I slip him a 5.
He goes, "Rick Altura."
My eyes get wide.
Lawrence turns to you and goes, kind of in a low voice, "Isn't that a gangster?"
"Yeah."
He goes, "You didn't get this from Tony, did you?"
I just give him a look.
I don't think Tony would ever put you in a bad position unless you pissed him off or something.
I haven't done anything to piss him off that I know of.
I gotta ask you, kid, how long have you been seeing him?
About 6 months.
And you know what he does for a living, right?
I know not to ask too many questions.
All right, let's get this over with.
Okay, so we go.
All right, you get up to the room, you open the door, and the smell of blood hits you.
That is not what I was expecting.
There's blood all over the place, and Rick is lying on the floor, riddled with bullets. His window is open, and he's got a dead rat stuffed in his mouth.
Oh, Chet, okay.
Can you make a resolve check for me?
Yeah, I was going to say, even though she's been to the scenes of car accidents and whatnot.
This is different.
This is different. I was going to say she runs outside and throws up, but.
You can say that if you want. If you want to just, even if you make the resolve check.
Yeah. Okay, let me do my resolve check. Yes, I made my resolve check, but this is a lot of blood.
Yeah, it is.
And I like step outside and throw up. But as I'm throwing up between wretches, I'm like, keep snapping pictures.
Yeah, all you're hearing is the sound of the bulb go off and him putting the bulb in.
I'm okay. Keep snapping pictures.
You take the scene in. Do you call the cops right away after you've taken pictures and whatever?
I mean, that's all we're going to get from this scene, right?
Right, probably.
So, yeah, we call the cops.
Cops show up. One of them's named Gary Tennant. He's a detective. He walks up. He goes, so let me get this straight. You randomly showed up to this place, opened the door with a photographer with you, found a dead body with a rat shoved in its mouth, took a couple pictures, I'm guessing, called us to let us know what had happened. Is that what you're telling me, Toots?
Yeah, Toots. You think if I knew what was happening in there, you'd have this out in the hallway? And I point to where I got sick.
I'm going to want copies of all your pictures. You didn't touch anything, right?
We're not stupid.
Here's the deal. How much money do you have on you?
Why?
Lawrence just shoots you a really sharp look.
She's still a little, like, oh.
Because if you want him to keep that camera and you to keep the story, you have to make a donation to the LAPD. That's why. Got it, Toots?
Got it, sweetheart. And I pass him. I probably have, I don't know. I'm dating a gangster, so I might have a little bit on me.
You might have a 20 on you.
Yeah, so I slip him a 20.
He takes the 20. He says, just so you know, this is a discount this time. Next time you pull this BS, it's going to cost you 100. Now get out of here.
Okay, we go.
Lawrence looks at you and goes, yeah, the cops, you got to have tip money.
Well, now I know.
Let's get this back to the bullpen and write it up before the vultures.
I also know I may not want to be reporting the crime beat.
Write it well enough. You can write whatever you want. But yeah, maybe the crime beat isn't for you, especially if you're going to throw up in the hallway.
Hey, it was my first one. Give me a break. At least I didn't throw up on the body.
You write this big story. You do some research, get it out. It's well written. It's well received. And it makes your career. Soon enough, you're getting tips on other things going on in Hollywood. But like you said, you're not really into doing all of this murder and whatever. You start only taking the tips that have to do with starlets getting drunk or whatever.
Right.
And over the next few months, that turns into more of a gossip column than a hard-hitting reporting column. And you start to get known throughout the industry as someone who's fair, but also a little cold-hearted. Variety starts to knock on your door to have you write for them. There's kind of this whirlwind relationship with Tony. Do you ever speak to him about the dead man in the apartment?
Probably not in depth, but I would mention that I got sick and that maybe the crime beat isn't for me.
I understand that, but it made your career, at least.
I do appreciate that.
And I'm about to make your day. Pulls out a rock the size of your fist. It's a pretty big ring. Goes, you want to get hitched?
I thought you'd never ask.
Well, you keep saying no to all the fun stuff, so I guess we have to get married.
And she just giggles and takes the ring and kisses him.
A few months later, you get married for about 8 months or a year. For the first year, let's say, it's great. Everything's perfect. And you have more money than you know what to do with. He's got a ton of money. You've talked about not having kids. He's pressuring you to have kids because he's from a Catholic family. And that's part of the whole big families, big responsibilities when they get older.
Yeah. And I'm like, you married a woman who wanted a career.
I know. But family is just an important part of life, you know? I mean, I agreed not to tell your mom that I was Catholic when we got married. And she came all the way out here to watch us get married in some Protestant church. That was a big sacrifice. We all have to make sacrifices for love, honey.
I know, but sometimes family can hold you back. You know what I mean?
We'll talk about it more. Anyway, I got to go out. I got some things to do.
All right.
I'll be back later. You know, late. You know, my work. I got to stay out late.
Yeah, interesting how you're kind of over-explaining that, but yeah. No, she wouldn't say that. She'd think, okay, honey, yeah.
So he heads out, and he's been doing this a little bit more over the last few months. He used to be home by like 10 or take you out with him, but lately he's been staying out later and later. And you guys have been in this relationship for, let's say, a couple of years now, maybe 3 years. And then the next day you go into work, and at this point you're at Variety, and you took Lawrence with you. He's very close to retirement, and the extra pay is going to help him. And Lawrence comes up to your desk and goes, I got some bad news for you, kid. Throws down a manila envelope in front of you.
What is it?
Another reporter's doing a piece on the mob in the city. Got pictures of your husband with a woman. Was able to get them. They're not going to publish them, but because there's really no story there. Mob guys always have,
someone on the side.
Yeah, mistresses. I don't know if you care or not. I mean, I don't know if this is something that you care about, but I thought I'd let you know.
Thanks, Lawrence. You're a pal.
Maybe.
You're just looking out for me.
Trying to, but I'm sorry. This sucks.
Yeah, I think I need to take the afternoon off.
Makes sense. What do you do?
I go home and I wait for Tony, smoking a cigarette in the dark. No, I'm kidding.
Tony comes through the front door and just kind of, you're sitting at the dining room table, and at some point, Tony comes home. Why are you up? I told you I was going to be late.
Where were you, Tony?
What's the matter? I was doing work. You've never asked before.
Is this who you were working with? And I throw the pictures on the table.
Baby, look, I'm sorry you've had to see those. It's no big deal, though.
No big deal?
Look, let's be honest. I mean, I love you. I really love you. But I was kind of hoping at some point you'd come around to wanting to have kids, too. And I don't think that's going to happen.
So I'm getting this straight. You're blaming you having an affair or several affairs on me not wanting kids?
I mean, why does it matter? It's recreational. I love you. You're sitting in the expensive house with the expensive clothes and the job. You're the one that didn't want a family or to take on all the responsibilities of being married in the first place. You just wanted a husband, a meal ticket.
I can't believe you even said that. I was earning my own meals, Tony.
You knew I wanted kids.
And you knew I didn't.
Yeah, but you were supposed to come around. That's how this works, right? I mean, you're young yet. You still have a few years before you're unable to have kids. So I was hoping at some point maybe you'd want to have kids. And I don't see why you're getting so mad.
I mean, she's got tears kind of coming down her face. She's not sobbing, but she's crying and she's definitely angry.
He's not looking you in the eye. He's definitely avoiding, even though he's giving off bravado. It is definitely difficult for him to look at you, but he's dying on the hill he's dying on, I guess. He says, look, can't we just talk about this? I mean, I won't see her again. I promise.
Okay, not her, but how do I know it won't be someone else?
Is
she the first or is she just the one right now?
The only thing that matters right now is you and I. Look, I'm sorry. I love you. I got a bit out of control. I get it.
Tony, I mean, I love you too. I want this to work, but I can't be chained to the house.
No one's asking you to be chained to the house. I mean,
you're asking me to have kids.
Look, we'll get a nanny or something if you have to keep that job. But you've got everything you want. You got all the money in the world. Why would you need anything else? Family means legacy, you know?
I mean, I guess we can try to make it work, but you got to promise you can't go off like this, Tony. You can't. I can't take it.
Okay, everything will be fine.
Do you promise?
Of course, I promise. And when he looks at you, though he's promising, there's this look in his eye that tells you that the scorpion will be the scorpion.
I think at this point, though, she wants to believe him.
Okay.
She wants this to work so badly.
He walks over to you and takes you in his arms. He says, honey, it'll never happen again. I promise.
I love you, Tony.
I love you, baby. And that's where we're going to stop this episode. All right. That was good. That was fun. I think that gives a lot of insight to Belle. All right. So where can people find you, Michelle?
Well, it's so weird. I'm so used to having other people talking. You can find me on the socials at Michulhu. That's M-I-C-H-U-L-H-U.
And I am Wes Otis. You can find me at Plate Mail Games on Blue Sky and other places around the internet. You can find the show at 12 Sided Stories, the number 12, and then Sided Stories on Blue Sky as well, and other places like Threads and all that good stuff, and on Instagram. If you want to really get a chance to talk with us, join our Discord. Go to 12sidedstories.com, all one word, and all spelled out. You can find our links there and join our Discord and talk with us and say hello. Finally, if you want to help out the show, definitely join our Patreon, give us a shout out, or give us a review. Any of those things are very helpful and really go a long way to help us grow the channel. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Michelle, for playing. And we will see you next time with more Otherworld Hollywood.
Bye.